we are going to be talking about light for these next few weeks, and what God has done, what Jesus has done to bring light into this world. And along those lines, this morning, I want to read to you the passage that we're going to focus on. It's from John chapter 1. It's going to be on the screen. It's in your bulletin. It's in the app if you want to follow along there and take notes. But John chapter 1, and this is what John writes. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not understood or overcome it. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. And he was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, nor of a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Out of his fullness, we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth come through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. Have you ever gotten up early in the morning? I mean, like, to see the sunset early. I mean, in the dark of night, when it's still just, you can't see anything out there, and then you watch as the sun comes up. I can still remember the first night I ever stayed up all night long. I was a teenager, I think in high school, and I decided, you know what, I'm gonna stay up all night long and see what this feels like. And so I stayed up all night, and somewhere in the middle of the night, I decided to climb up on my roof, my parents' house. That, don't worry, it was flat because there were seven of us, my parents, my grandmother, and the four kids. And so at some point, my dad decided three bedrooms wasn't enough for all of us to be in. And so we built an addition, and that back part of the house had a nice flat roof that I could climb up on and just sit there. And I sat there in just the pitch blackness and just waited. And I remember as just, you know, light seemed to begin to penetrate the darkness, kind of like hearing the sun's footsteps before it gets into the room. And then just brighter and brighter, everything, I began to be able to see the trees in front of me and see the other houses and see the things going on around me. And just as the light shined and radiated, there is something amazing about a sunrise when you watch it that way. There's something, it's like watching creation happen. It's like watching something new just come to being. There is something incredible about a sunrise. And that's what John is trying to communicate in these verses. This is what he's telling us. He's saying, hey, did you see that? See, did you see the light that just entered the world? Do you see how it rose and shined a light on everything? And now everything looks different. It's changed the way we see everything. Because this is John's story of Jesus' birth. And it's completely different from all the other gospel stories of Jesus' birth, because what John wants us to see is that when Jesus, the light, entered the world, it was the genesis of a new creation. John is writing the new Genesis. In this passage of the Bible, I have studied and read this so much this week, I feel like I've just overloaded on it. There is so much here, so dense, so thick. You could spend days just digging in and trying to understand it all. I know I can't do justice in this short time we have, but what I really hope for us today is that we'll understand what John is saying about you and I and our place in this new creation as God's children, and what he's saying about Jesus and who Jesus is. So let's follow John's train of thought. Again, in the beginning, John 1, 1 through 5. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not understood or overcome it. And right away, many of you will recognize that This sounds like Genesis 1:1, doesn't it? It sounds like the creation story. In the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth. Sounds just like that. And actually, John is using a particular word here, the word that we translate word, it's the word logos, because that word has a rich meaning for the people he's writing to. And we always say this, the Bible wasn't written to us, but it's written for us. So if we want to understand what it means for us, we need to first do some work and try and understand what it meant right there, the people John was writing to. And the people John was writing to, some of them were Jews. And the Jewish people would have immediately thought what many of us just thought of, oh, that sounds like Genesis 1, in the beginning, God creating. And they believed that God's word, God spoke his word, and his spoken word made things come into being. God spoke, and there was this, and God spoke, and there was that. Psalm 33:6 says, by the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, their starry host by the breath of his mouth. So for them, this logos was the way God interacted with this world and communicated with humanity. The word of the Lord would come to the prophets, and then they would speak. God's word is what made things happen here. It represented wisdom and truth. And they used logos sometimes as a substitute for writing God's name because they were afraid to write God's name. They thought it would break the third commandment if they actually wrote God's name. So if you look at some of their paraphrases of the Old Testament that they wrote in Aramaic, they would use the word logos instead of writing God's name because they kind of understood this as connected to God in some way. There was a Greek philosopher named Philo who used the word logos too, a Jewish philosopher who used it too as this force coming from God. But he thought it was like an impersonal thing, not anything you could make contact with. It was just this power coming from God, emanating from God. Then the Greek philosophers, they used the word logos too. They had an understanding of that word too. For them, it was a powerful word. They used it to represent whatever it was that held everything together, this grand unifying power that sits underneath everything. It's why there's order in the world. It's why things are rational. They thought this word logos is the word they would use to talk about all the things that, or whatever it was that held all things together and unified them. And that's the natural laws that they could observe. There must be this wisdom, this logos that sits underneath it all, holding it all together. And they debated endlessly about what that was. And so they had background of understanding what this word logos that John uses here was and what it meant. But John, in these three short sentences he starts his gospel with, is going to completely transform the way everyone understands this word. Before we look at it, let's just connect that to our world today. Because isn't it true that many people, probably most people, would say they believe in some kind of power that is holding everything together, it seems, in bringing order, and we don't really know what it is, but there's some kind of power out there, and among those who believe that, they really think it's like an impersonal force. Many don't really attach it to a god or what any church says or any religion says. It's just this force. It's kind of like there's a Star Wars theology out there. Right? There's a force that everything comes from and everything flows through, and it's holding everything together. So in many ways, our cultures today think the way the Greeks thought back then. Only we don't spend a lot. When's the last time you spent time thinking about what is it that's holding all this together and holding life together? We were too busy with our schedules, with our kids' soccer schedules, with you know what we're going to binge watch next on Netflix and our work schedule. We're too busy with all these other things to pay attention to what is life and what's holding it all together. But we do think there's something. Your friends, the people you talk to at work, they will probably come down and say, yeah, there's something. I don't know what it is. You probably can't know what it is. So let's just go and focus on other things. But John's going to tell them, here, you talk about this as logos, and you view it as coming from God as logos. I'm going to tell you what this is, and this is what John writes to them. In the beginning was the Word. Everyone nods their heads. Yep, we get that. We're with you. They know John's talking about this powerful thing. The Greeks, yeah, we got you, John. It's that powerful force that's, you know, everything makes everything hold together and is rational. And Jews would say, we got you, John. That's the voice of God that comes out and makes things happen in the world. But then John says, and the Word was with God. And like, whoa, what do you mean the Word was with God? Like a person, like with? And the word John actually, what he literally says is the Word was toward God. It's not that it's coming out of God like speech. It's not something created by God. It's not some principle that just mysteriously and vaguely sits underneath everything. John is saying this word is a person And this person is in an intimate relationship with God, focused on God, oriented toward God, moving toward God, not coming out of him, not created by God, but with God. And at this point, everyone reading this, all the Greek friends and Jewish friends of John would kind of turn their heads and squint their eyes. I don't know why we do that. Does that ever help you understand something when you do that, when you turn your head? It doesn't help us, but we do it when we're confused. What are you talking about? And John, what he says next does not clear it up, because then the next thing he says is, and the Word was God. Wait, so I get you. In the beginning was the Logos, and the Logos was with God, and it was God? How can the Word be both separate, distinct, and also be God? But this is exactly what John is saying. He's saying the Word is with God and the Word is God. He doesn't say God is the Word. That would just mean, you know, that would flatten it out. No, he's saying there's the Word and then there's God as we know him, the one who caused creation and the one through whom everything was created. And he just reemphasizes that in verse 2. He says, yep, he was with God in the beginning. He is intimately connected with God. And John's telling them, you had ideas about what held the world together and about what sustained life. And some of you believe it was God and his word that he would speak out and that would make things happen. And others of you thought it was just this vague thing. You didn't know what you meant by this word, Logos, but I can tell you what it means. And he explains, verse 3, through him, all things were made, and without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of mankind. Yes, the word is responsible for bringing order to creation. He is the one through whom God created. So God and the Word each have a relationship with everything that is, you and me, why we exist, this world and why it exists. They have a relationship, God as causer, the Word as agent, through whom God, with whom God works. And our language really fails here. It's so hard to express this truth about what God is and who God is. But this is what John's trying to do, because this is why Jesus came, to shine light on this. So the Word is God, and at the same time, the Word is distinct, so he can say he's with God. This life we all have, it's in the Word. You don't have life separate from this Word, separate from God. The life we live, this light we have, this light we live in, is all from God. Take us out of God, and what do we have? We have a darkness you can't even imagine. Sergio went to the store this week to buy black paint, and he got the darkest black paint he could find, and that's it, and it really looks gray. Imagine the darkest darkness you can imagine, and it's not as dark as it would be if you were outside of God. God is the light we live in. There are two ways, then he says, he goes on, he's saying, I'm trying to help you see what I've seen. The same way Paul talked about it. In him we live and move and have our being. The way Paul said, look, it's not this unknown God you're all worshiping. I know who this is. John is saying, look, I've seen something. I understand who God is. And if you'll open your eyes, you'll see it too. You'll see he is the Word. Life is in him. And he is the light we all live in. Simply put, you and I don't have life without God. But then here's the tragedy of the situation. Verse 5, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not understood or overcome it. And there are two ways to understand. That's why I give it to you, understood slash overcome. There's two ways to understand that word that John uses at the end of this sentence. And John does that a lot. If you spend time studying John's gospel, you'll see he likes to use words that have more than one layer of meaning and apply their layers of meaning. And so in this case, I think he's trying to get at both of them. And he wants to take us both ways. On the one hand, he's saying that this life, this light that comes from God, that is in the Word, he shined it into the darkness of this world and no one's been able to understand it. And the Greek friends of John would say, yeah, that's right, because we listen to those silly philosophers all day and they argue and debate and they still obviously don't understand it. And for the Jews, John is thinking, God shined his light and gave you his law so you would know who he is and what he's like, but you still never understood who he was. You never understood what he was actually telling you. You missed it. You misunderstood it. They didn't understand God. And here we are today. And I think we can still ask, let's ask the honest question. Do we understand God? Do you understand God? The tragedy is the light shines in the darkness and the darkness doesn't understand. But then on another level, John is also pointing to the light shined in the darkness, and the darkness couldn't contain it, couldn't overcome it, couldn't hold it back. When God spoke and light came into this creation, he was bringing order, and nothing could hold it back. The darkness could not hold it back, could not resist it. But then I think John's also thinking of one particular moment because of the way he talks about this, the language he uses. It sounds like he's thinking of one particular instance where darkness tried to overcome the light and it couldn't. He's not going to tell us what that is yet, but I think we know. Tasha mentioned it before on the cross, when darkness tried to overwhelm the light, but it couldn't. So instead, John goes on and he says something else that's really intriguing about this light coming into the world. He says, verse 9, the true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world, and he was in the world. And even though the world was made through him, the world didn't recognize him. At which point, the people listening to John or reading John would say, what do you mean? What are you telling us? You're telling us the source of life and light came in, and how? What did it look like? How did it come in? Was it in, like, was there a temple it was in and we missed it? Was there a mountaintop we could have gone to have seen him and encountered him? What did it look like? And notice John's now moving back and forth between light and word to talk about the same person, to refer to this person who is both God and with God. He says, verse 11, that he came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent or of human decision or of a husband's will, but born of God. You can feel John drawing the net closer. Those of you who know the Bible, who know Jesus, you can feel him drawing the net tighter as we go, leading us in our curiosity toward a realization that he himself had come to about who this word is and who God is. We're going to come back to these verses in a minute, but let's keep moving because their question, who is the word? Who is this light? How is he God and with God at the same time? How did he come into our world? Where could we have seen him? How did we miss him? And then John drops what would have been a bomb on them. He says, verse 14, the word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The word became meat, he says. The word became flesh, became a human being, a baby born in a cave, in a dugout place where animals were kept. And this powerful force that they looked to was holding all things together, or they thought of as the word that came out of God's mouth, became the person who became flesh and became like you and I. He was here. God with us. And John says, yes. And what's more, he put up a tent, a tabernacle is the word he uses. And he lived here with us. And some of you, when I say the word tabernacle, you remember what John's Jewish friends would have remembered. The tabernacle was the big tent they carried with them and set up. That was where they worshiped God and made sacrifices. That's where God's presence would be. And once a year, one very special person got to go in and experience God's presence. They didn't get to see God, but they got to experience God's presence and be in God's presence. One person once a year in that tabernacle. And what John says is, guess what? God, the word, logos, the light, came and set himself up in a tent made of human flesh. He became human like us and lived among us. Came as a naked baby lying in the hay. And John says, yeah, we got to see his glory. Only his glory was not the glory of, you know, a palace or some giant temple or anything like that. His glory was not that he had movie star good looks. His glory was not some brilliant marketing strategy he had or wealth. His glory was that he loved people, that he healed people, that he delivered people, that he sacrificed and gave himself for others, that he rescued people from torment. His glory was that he had no place to lay his head, even from his very birth. His glory was that he poured himself out on everyone around him. He suffered, he sacrificed, and ultimately his glory is the moment he rose above everyone else in the world was when he was on the cross. That's his glory, on the cross. We've seen his glory, such glory it is. This is John's version of the birth of Jesus. There's no shepherds here, right? No wise men, the things we like to decorate with all the time. There's no, you know, manger scene or any of that. John is writing the birth narrative of Jesus as a Genesis story, as a new creation story, because Jesus' birth is the Genesis of the new creation. He comes into this world driving out the darkness from the moment he's born, all the way through that darkest moment on the cross, until the Son of God rises from the dead and radiates triumphantly through the whole universe. And what is he radiating? He's radiating, John tells us, grace and truth. Verse 16, out of his fullness, we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth come through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. And now John has finally made it clear and plain. When he says God and with God, the Word was God, the Word was with God, he's talking about Father, Son. He's talking about God as Trinity, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. He's going to reveal that through this whole gospel he writes. The Word is with God and is God. That Word is Jesus. The one through whom all things were made is Jesus. The one in whom is life and light for all mankind is Jesus. The light who came into the world and fought back the darkness is Jesus. The one who we didn't recognize, even though we were created through him, is Jesus. But out of his fullness, thankfully, even though we didn't recognize him, we have received grace on top of grace. In other words, Jesus has an endless supply, this fullness of him. He's got an endless supply of grace. And out of that grace, we receive grace on top of grace, because grace has been given throughout history. The grace of existence was given to us. The grace of God revealing himself to the people of Israel, that was a grace. The grace of the law that he gave through Moses, revealing what God is like and what it means to love, that was a grace. All revealed what and led up to this ultimate grace that we've received in Jesus. Grace in place of grace already given. When I hear that, I picture being at the beach, standing there and watching the waves come in. Have you ever tried to stand on the beach and command the waves to come in or to stop coming in? We were at the beach, Christina's family went down to New Jersey and decided, let's have a vacation on the Jersey Shore all together. We rented a house, there were like 20 of us there. And at one point I had one of our cousin's young daughters on my shoulders. She was probably like 5. And I was walking in the ocean and the waves were crashing and they took me out. But I had her on my shoulders. And so I am under the water, holding her above the water, getting pushed all over the place, and I had no control. I couldn't stop those waves. You can't tell the waves to come in and go out. You have no control over that. And that's what grace is like. Grace is like the waves. I have no control over it. I can't command it. Grace is like the waves. It just pours out on us, and we have no say over it. God pours his grace out on us like waves. These waves of grace keep coming. Even as one's receding, another one is crashing over it. And this is what John was a fisherman. He knew what waves were like. He'd spent all that time around them. He's telling us about Jesus and his grace, that it's wave after wave. Grace and truth come through Jesus Christ. Because it's not only grace that we need. It's not just this gift of forgiveness that I need from Jesus. I also need truth. What we desperately need is truth. The truth about who God is and about who we are. If we're going to live and survive in this world, as this creation falls apart, we need the truth about who God is and who you and I are. And that's why Jesus, the Word, the light, came to bring about new creation where we could know God, where we could see him. Verse 18 says, no one has ever seen God but the one and only Son, who is himself God, and is in closest relationship with the Father. He has made him known. Jesus has come to make God known. If you want to know who God is and what God is like, look at Jesus. And what Jesus shows us is that God is our Father who desperately longs for us. Even though we're all his sons and daughters because we're created by him, he wants us to be his children. And there's a difference between those two. God is desperate for us to be his children. J.I. Packer once wrote, he's one of the best theologians of the last century, he said, "You sum up the whole of New Testament teaching in a single phrase if you speak of it as a revelation of the fatherhood of the Holy Creator. In the same way, you sum up the whole of New Testament religion if you describe it as the knowledge of God as one's Holy Father. If you want to judge how well a person understands Christianity, find out how much he makes of the thought of being God's child and having God as his Father. If this is not the thought that prompts and controls his worship and prayers and his whole outlook on life, it means that he does not understand Christianity very well at all." Go back to verses 11 through 13 with me. The whole point here is for us to understand from this passage, who is God and who are we? And who is Jesus? Jesus is the one who brings the light into the world. Jesus is God, Son of God, come to begin this new creation, the light that brings new creation and reveals to us who God is. God is Father, who loves us desperately. And who are you and I? We are his children. Verse 11, he came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or of a husband's will, but born of God. God longs for us to be his children in this new creation. And this is the path to being part of the new creation. Right here, he's giving us. And notice a few things with me. To those who receive Jesus, who believe in him, who trust in him, and who he is, look what happens. He gives the right to become children of God. Three parts to that. The first one, he gives. He gives. You don't take it. You don't earn it. You don't inherit it from your parents. Just because you come to church all your life does not mean that you've actually gotten this. It's when you put your faith and trust and believe in who Jesus is. He gives you. He gives this to you. It is a gift. It is grace. And I know we talk about that a lot. We harp on that a lot. It is a gift. There's nothing you and I can do to earn it. And the reason we press so hard on it, the reason God's word presses so hard on it, is because there's a big difference between you and I understanding a concept and embracing a truth. So we can understand the concept that it's a grace that's given to me. But then when I turn around and I'm impatient and angry at my wife, that shows that I probably haven't understood grace when I won't give her grace. Right? I've understood the concept, believe me. I've spent years trying to understand the concept. But do I embrace, have I embraced the truth of it? When I sit there and I beat on myself for my failures and who I'm not and what I ought to be, but I'm failing to be, when I do that, when I look at myself as though I'm not worth anything, what am I showing? I'm showing I have not yet, I may understand the concept of grace, but I haven't embraced this grace. If you're having trouble forgiving your spouse for something they've done, don't keep focusing on what it is they've done. Begin to focus on what Jesus has done here. His sacrifice was not just on this cross. His sacrifice was being God and becoming meat. It started there. His whole life leading up to the cross was a sacrifice plopped down for us. If you're having trouble giving forgiveness, your spouse, your friend, somebody like that, begin to focus on Jesus' grace and ask him to help you embrace his grace, because that will show you who you are. And who you are is not the person who has a right to condemn anybody and hold them down. You've received grace. Let grace flow through you like waves, grace on top of grace. Forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting what they've done or pretending it wasn't bad. It means you're not going to get them back for it. And yet so many of us, we sit with our grudges, we sit with our complaints, we sit in broken relationships, broken families, because we understand grace, we haven't embraced grace. He gives the right. The right to what? The right to become. The right to become something. It's not the power to become, right? It's not he gives you power and strength so now you can do what you have to do to become a child of God. No, he gives you the right. He gives you a new status is what he gives you. You and I have a status, and that status is child of God. So when you're struggling with your self-esteem and you think you're not worth something and you're digging deep into depression, deep into that darkness, and you're feeling that way, and I know a lot of us feel that way during this time of year, especially as you go through that right now, focus on this. Focus on grace. He gave you a new status, a status that is more valuable than anything else. You're God's child. When you believe in Jesus, when you believe in who he is and what it is he's done, you have a new status. He gives you this new status, this right to become. John 5:24, Jesus would say, very truly, very, very truly, this is really important, it's really true, I tell you, whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life and will not be judged, but has crossed over from death to life. Somehow we have already crossed over from death to life. That's what John's telling us. We already have this new life. We are given this new status already of child of God, children of God. Like we said, the Bible is very clear that God is our creator and we're all his sons and daughters in that regard, but we're not all his children. And the word John uses here is not the word for son or daughter, it's the word for children, which means community of children too. So hear this as community, as people. He is looking for a community of children to be joined together, to be his. He gives us the right to become his children, his family. And when we become God's children, part of this new creation, and he breathes this new life into us, it changes our whole outlook on life and the way we see everything. For John, the Christmas story is the story of the new creation, the genesis of the new creation. So think about Genesis with me for a minute, would you? In Genesis, God speaks, and by his word, light enters, and everything is brought into order. Over 7 days, God brings order, and then sits and rules and reigns over that order he has created. And he sends out his children, Adam and Eve. And what are they to do? They're supposed to fill the earth and subdue it. Have more children and fill the earth and subdue it. Take this garden and expand it and grow it and bring the beauty and order that I have created out and cover the whole earth with the beauty and order that I have given you. This is what creation was about, to chase back the darkness and for his children to bring beauty and order into his world. And then here in John's gospel, where does he start? With the word, bringing light into this world, chasing back the darkness, and bringing beauty, and beginning to order everything again. And if you read John's gospel carefully, you'll see he organizes it around 7 signs that Jesus does, like the 7 days of creation, each showing that Jesus is bringing new life, a new creation to this world. And then when Jesus goes through that cross, that final sign, he gives his life, and then what does he do? He lays down his head. He rests. He rises from the dead and he rules over this new creation. And now who are his children who are to go out into the world and bring this beauty, bring this order, bring this amazing life that we have received in this new creation? Who are the ones who are supposed to take this out into the world? It's us, his children, you and me. And Jesus says to us, you are the light of the world. Just pause on that. You are the light of the world. Not you individually, so don't get overwhelmed. Although you individually are a light of the world, and wherever you are, you can shine. I don't care what your job is like. I don't care what's going on in your family. You can shine where you are, but you're not called to just be a single candle burning. You are the light of the world. That's all those who are God's children. We are the light of the world. And guess what? When we light up this place, you can't miss it. You see it. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. You gather all these lights together, they cannot be hidden. And he says, verse 15 from Matthew chapter 5, neither do people, they don't light a lamp and then put it under a bowl. That's just stupid. Instead, they put it on a stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds of what? Creating, bringing beauty and order where there is chaos and darkness. Your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Do you want to be part of this new creation? Do you want to be part of what God is doing? Then it's time in this moment to put down all these other things you're holding on to. that are keeping you from recognizing who Jesus is. Whatever the habits are in your life or the busynesses of your life that is keeping you from seeing that your life is in Jesus and that God has called you to be his child in this new creation and to be an agent of this new creation, whatever's keeping you from seeing that and letting that determine the course of your day where you wake up every morning and you think, oh my gosh, look at this sunrise. I don't care if the clouds are out. That's not the sun you're looking at. Oh my gosh, look at this sunrise. I'm going to live in the beauty of this sun, all my days. It's time to let go of some of these things. There's no way around it. There's just things you've got to let go of. Christians, God did not bring us into this world. He did not make us his children so that we could just sit in the garden and have fun. He's made us his children so that we could go out and bring this new creation into the world around us. But if our hands are full of things and our eyes and our minds are full of things that are distracting, then how can we do it? How can we do it? If we're mired down in sin, how can we do it? We can't. But here's the beauty of what Jesus has done. It's grace on top of grace. Whatever condition you walked in here this morning, if you walked in here busted and broken, covered and caked in mud, so that you know that you're not really reflecting God's glory at all, you're not a light at all, right now in this moment, as we're going to spend some time worshiping, team, come back. Right now in this moment, as we worship God, he can begin to wipe you clean, cleaner than you've ever known and could ever imagine, and bring that new life into you. That's what his grace does. Wave after wave after wave of grace washing over us. So as we sing these songs, let this all sink in, who Jesus is, the light of the world, bringing about new creation. What he tells us about God, that God is our Father and loves us desperately. And what he tells us about ourselves, when we believe in Jesus, God, we become children, his children, agents of this new creation in this world. Let's stand together and let's worship.